Today, the Labor Department reported that the U.S. economy added 304,000 jobs in January. The unemployment rate ticked up slightly because of the month-long shutdown of the federal government. President Trump tweeted praise for what he called the strongest economy in the world. And at the White House this afternoon, the president told reporters he might declare a national emergency next week if lawmakers trying to avert another shutdown don't give him the money he wants for the wall.
Certainly thinking about it.
You're thinking ahead.
I think there's a good chance that we'll have to do that.
And there is a new hat in the ring for 2020. New Jersey Senator Cory Booker says he's running for president. So let's bring in our Friday politics roundtable. Abby Phillip is CNN White House correspondent. Abby, it's good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. And Chad Pergram, senior Capitol Hill producer for Fox News. Chad, good to have you too.
Hello.
Okay, so there's news on 2020 on the front there. New Jersey Senator Cory Booker did his first live TV interview as a presidential candidate this morning on ABC's The View. He was asked about how he'd get the vote of the forgotten person who might still be leaning towards Donald Trump.
There is a lot of pain, and the challenge is for us as Americans with a little bit more courageous empathy, recognize that this is a common pain, that we're all in this together. If you put off seeing a doctor because you can't afford it, that's not a Republican or a Democratic pain. That's right now hurting in America.
Abby, does Cory Booker have a shot?
Well, he probably has as much of a shot as anyone else in the Democratic race at this point. And I think what you're hearing in that clip, although I think for some people it might seem a little hard to pin down, is Cory Booker trying to do two things. One, tap into what Donald Trump tried to tap into, which is the forgotten man and woman. That's literally a phrase that Donald Trump used throughout the campaign in his inaugural speech and even as president. But then also kind of marry it to a sort of Obama-esque, politics of hope, a kind of positive message going into this campaign. So
Can he live in both worlds, do you think?
That's a really great question. I mean, I think no one really knows. Right now, no one knows whether or not the forgotten man and woman wants a positive, hope-filled message or whether they are just angry and want radical change. And I think that's going to be one of the central tensions of this next race is where are people leaning on that question. Cory Booker is staking out a slot in the sort of hope and change lane here. But he's also trying to tap into this idea that people feel like politics, government isn't working for them, the economy isn't working for them. And that's a very Trumpian message.
Chad Pergram, let's see how healthcare fits into all of that, because Booker is yet another Democrat in the field who is for Medicare for all. Do you expect that the eventual nominee among Democrats is going to have that as part of the platform?
Well, the problem that Democrats are going to have, and this is courting that, Midwestern voter, that swing voter, maybe somebody who voted for Donald Trump but might be dissatisfied now, is do these ideas on the left seem too radical and too far afield? You know, that is a balance that they have to strike. And whether that message is coming from someone like Cory Booker or someone who's not running for president, not eligible to run for president, like New York Democrat Alexandria Ocasio Cortez, there's going to be a concern that those messages, that everything coming out of the Democratic Party is radicalized. Now, here's the advantage, perhaps, for someone like Cory Booker. He is a disruptor. We're in a time right now in politics where disruption is very important and very successful. Donald Trump was, in fact, a disruptor. Cory Booker got into politics being a disruptor, running against Sharp James, the longtime mayor of Newark, back during Superstorm Sandy. You know, people were tweeting at him directly, and he was tweeting back. They needed fire service here. There were cats up trees, all those types of things. So he comes at this from a very different approach. And when you say, you know, that he kind of tries to present this positive message, don't forget that he can also go for the jugular. Now, he got a lot of criticism for this on day three of the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, the so-called Spartacus moment, but he's willing to go to the mat. So we don't know what the electorate in 2020 is seeking, but it does seem, as we put it earlier, Cory Booker might be able to play in both worlds.
Abby, I wonder if you can just weigh in on that idea. Is it any more disruptive and is it radicalized anymore, something like Medicare for All, when just about all the primary candidates declared so far are calling for it?
You know, I really don't know. I mean, I think we have to keep in mind here that sometimes the rules of politics that seem to have held for a very long time can change. And I think we shouldn't take what worked a couple years ago and assume it's going to work now. not to bring up Trump and everything, but I think it's an important lesson that when Trump ran in 2016, he was running on a lot of platform issues that literally were anathema to the Republican Party. He was talking about tariffs. He was talking about literally building a wall at the border. And all of those things have now become things that he is doing as president. He won on that platform. And so I think what Democrats are saying here is, let's not assume that the electorate is not ready for this thing that we've been telling them for many years is too radical. I think they're trying out this idea that when you present to the voters potentially quote-unquote radical ideas that that Democrats believe can solve their problems, maybe they might go for it. That's the lesson of Bernie Sanders as well, who also ran on Medicare for All in 2016 and gave Hillary Clinton a run for her money in the primary, and who even Donald Trump said would have been a formidable challenge to him in a general election. So I think we should wait and see what happens, because I think Democrats are trying to say we need to give voters something a little bit more daring and a little bit more bold, and not just assume that going down the middle is always the way to go in order to win a presidential election in this country.
We will have plenty of time to wait and see how this 2020 race evolves over time. So let's go to the other big story that Washington is talking about. There's this bipartisan group of senators and House members. They're in negotiations to come up with a border security solution that will hopefully avert another government shutdown on February 15th. It does seem like both sides are dug in. Here's House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
There's not going to be any wall money in the legislation.
And the president apparently listening, because hours later, he called reporters to say this.
She's just playing games. So if there's no wall, it doesn't work.
Chad, where are we on these negotiations? Are they futile at this point?
What you're hearing from the speaker and what you're hearing from the president of the United States is noise. It is said that there are three types of members of Congress. There are Democrats, there are Republicans, and there are appropriators.
The appropriators are the ones who are negotiating this bill.
That's right. They're the members of this conference committee. And what a conference committee is you take the House plan, you take the Senate plan, you take Democrats' plans, Republicans' plan, you put them into a congressional Cuisinart and try to mix this all together. So they are kind of inured to this public conversation of Nancy Pelosi and President Trump battling it out across the airwaves here. I am told, though, that no matter what you think might or might not be in this bill, that the letters W-A-L-L will not appear in the legislation. Mm. And that might work to advantage on both sides. The idea that Republicans can say, look, we got this and we're calling it a wall. And Democrats say, well, we got all this border security and we're calling it border security. And then, you know, ne'er the twain shall meet and they can pass it. Here's the other little dirty secret. They only have about a week's time to work this out. The House of Representatives, under Democratic control, now has this 72-hour rule, meaning it's a hard 3 days from when they introduce legislation post-text to when they have to get it out. So the deadline is really next Friday, maybe at the utter latest a week from Sunday, because they have to process this through the House and then also get it through the Senate. Now, keep in mind that even when you talk to Republican appropriators, members of that committee, that they say that if they were to appropriate $5.7 billion in wall funding or whatever you want to call it, then they have to start to cut into other homeland security priorities, and that makes the country less safe. So, you know, they're capitated. There's something that was imposed some years ago, sequestration, and they cannot bust those caps unless they declare that money to be emergency spending. And I should note that that's different than the president declaring a national emergency.
Abby, Donald Trump told the New York Times that intelligence officials who publicly contradicted his take on the threat posed by Iran, Russia, North Korea, Afghanistan, and Syria in a congressional hearing this week were misquoted. Thing is, it was on live TV, and there was a published report that went along with the testimony. So what is the president's strategy here, and is anything credible about it?
That's exactly right. And just hours before he said that to the New York Times, I was one of the reporters in the Oval Office, and I asked him about their testimony. I asked him, given his criticism of them on Twitter, he called them naive and passive. He said they needed to go back to school. Do you still have confidence in them? And he was the one to say, I think they're wrong and that I will be proven right. So the president himself was the one who believed that they were wrong, that whatever they said on Capitol Hill was wrong. But it turns out, you know, from what I'm told by sources, that the president actually didn't watch their testimony and he didn't read their written report either. So he was responding to what he saw on television, which made it easier for his aides to talk him off of where he started the day after they testified. They were able to convince him that somehow it was being reported wrong. But at the end of the day, the crux of the problem might in fact be that the president did not himself consume the information that the intelligence chiefs were relaying to Congress. And so he's now spinning this as a case of them being misquoted when, in many cases, they were reading word for word from their written report when they testified in Congress. And those words that they spoke were played back exactly as they said it on television for the world to see. I think we should just ask people to go and do the reading and watching themselves.
Chad, what effect does that have on U.S. intelligence, not to mention on the public, but when U.S. intelligence officials deliver this kind of, oh, you know what? We're running out of time. That's such a great question.
It was a good question.
Yeah, you'll weigh in later on.
It's just another case of where the president, has thrown somebody in his administration under the bus, and that's always a problem.
Fox's Chad Pergram and CNN White House correspondent Abby Phillip, thank you both very much.
Thank you.